Once that stage of the illness began, remembered her niece, Mary, it was just like a spiral. Down, down, down. It wasn't a gradual thing. It was fast. It left Catherine utterly unable even to direct her children's care via the housekeeper. "She was so ill," said Mary. "I truly do not remember her interacting with the children. She wasn't able. You can't imagine. It had just sapped all the energy and everything out of her." All Catherine could do was lie weakly on her bed in the front room with the shades drawn. Her days were punctuated by the taking of her medicine and by the frequent rattle of the train tracks behind the house, the sound of carriages bearing people away on journeys that Catherine Donohue could never now undertake. The house had a smell of urine. Her entire world was that front room. She lay under a blanket, the tumour on her hip, a malignant mountain rising beneath, with every bone in her body aching. She was in so much pain. "I just remember her moaning, moaning," remembered Mary quietly. "You knew that she was in pain, but she didn't have the energy to scream. Moaning was about the best she could do. I think she just didn't have the energy to cry or cry out. She just moan. I can't describe," she went on, "how sad that house was. You felt the sadness when you came in there." As Catherine's illness worsened, some of her relatives considered her condition too horrific for her young nieces and nephews to see. "She was falling apart from the radium," recalled her niece Agnes. "They didn't want us to see her. They said she looked so terrible." So, although Agnes's parents would visit Catherine once a week, she always had to wait outside. One relative who became a frequent visitor was Tom's big sister, Margaret. She was a stocky 51-year-old woman who was the boss of the family. "She was the only woman that I knew of that could drive," recalled her nephew, James. "She had an automobile called the Whippet." Another relative remarked, "She'd go take care of Catherine and take care of the kids. She did what a good sister-in-law would do." Father Griffin was another regular visitor, and Catherine welcomed the nuns from the convent too, who brought her a relic of the true cross. "It is like having God in the house with me," she exclaimed in elation. She also took solace from an unexpected source: the public. With her story emblazoned across the newspapers, readers were horrified by it in a way that some of the women's neighbours had never been. Catherine received hundreds of lovely letters that came from coast to coast. People sent her trinkets and ideas for cures, money for flowers to brighten her sick room. Some simply wrote in the hope that, "My letter will cheer you a little." "You have my sympathy and my greatest desire for a complete victory," read one, "and I know millions of people think the same." Her friends also lifted her spirits. Marie would spend an evening with her, sitting by the side of the wrought iron bed. "Olive brought me a chicken all cooked up lovely," Catherine wrote to Pearl with pleasure. "She, like you, dear, are truly pals, and may God bless you both."